welcome to our Business Gateway series of podcasts. Becoming an entrepreneur is an exciting and challenging journey that requires a combination of vision, dedication, and practical skills. In this episode of our podcast series, we're going to be finding out what it's like to become an entrepreneur and a true innovator. We're going to talk about securing funding, a marketable idea, managing risk, and much more. With me today is Andy Haddon, founder of Lost Shore Surf Resort. He's secured tens of millions of pounds to build and launch Lost Shore, which is set to open in late summer 2024. Andy has emerged as a prominent figure and innovator within the global wave pool industry. Lost Shore Surf Resort will become Europe's largest inland surfing destination and is set to become one of Scotland's biggest tourist attractions. Based in Edinburgh, this world-class facility will offer lodge accommodation, restaurants, shopping, and a wellness spa. And it's expected to attract tourists from around the world. And in true entrepreneurial style, Andy has established his own co-working and flexible office space business in North Berwick and Falkirk. Hello, Andy.
Hi there.
Welcome to the Business Gateway podcast. So, Lost Shore Surf Resort, tell us a bit about it.
Well, Lost Shore Surf Resort is Scotland's newest leisure and staycation facility. We're going to be opening in September of this year, and we're right tucked away in the central belt here, easy to access. And what's hopefully going to be very exciting is we're providing access to what we believe is one of the world's most fun sports in surfing, providing that access to the masses. And when I say providing access, I don't just mean to something that's a little bit like surfing. It's in skiing parlance, it's like we're delivering the Three Valleys ski resort on the edge of Edinburgh, because this, at a touch of a button, you're able to provide waves that are expert waves for the top pros in the world, and very few people probably in Scotland could surf them, right down to lovely little beginner waves to get you into it. So it's an incredibly exciting time for the project. We've been under construction for around about 18 months. Touch wood, we're still on time there for opening. We'll see how it goes this year, but we're very confident that we can make it open for our opening date in September. And what's interesting about what we're doing, I think, to the people of Scotland, is that it's very much a resort. It's not just about the surfing. It's about the accommodation. It's about the food. We want it to be a real foodie haven. It's about the events, curations. It's really an accumulation of a number of years working with a lot of really good Scottish, very much predominantly Scottish local companies, and thinking to ourselves, how could we make the funnest destination for us, for our families, for our friends, young and old? And this is the accumulation of that.
It sounds hugely exciting, but your background as a property surveyor, you've transitioned into a pioneering figure within the global wave pool industry. What made you make the change, and what's the inspiration behind this innovative leap?
Well, firstly, just hearing you use the words global wave pool industry is music to my ears, because it's what I've certainly been talking about for a long time, but it's only really becoming a £1 billion industry in the last 2 or 3 years as these things start to develop. And you're quite right. It's a pioneering time in that industry. You know, there's a lot opening all over the world, and what really made me go into this from my career as a chartered surveyor was probably a combination of three things. I think one would be I was having potentially a little bit of an existential, I mean, how do you even say that word, crisis in after the 2008 recession, or basically I got made redundant like a number of other people. I had to go down and work in Birmingham, and I did a lot of thinking about, you know, why has this happened to me and all the rest of it. And I come from quite a cozy existence in Edinburgh, you know, a nice family, a few friends, played a bit of rugby at the weekend. That was nice, get a job, off you go. Suddenly I'm in the centre of Birmingham, not knowing anyone, doing a job that I was, to be honest, way out my depth in. But thankfully, it was a great job and I had a very good boss and I learned a lot there. So I did a lot of thinking in those years and I thought to myself, do I really want to be in a position where my career is in the hands of others? If you can't control your own destiny working for, say, a big corporate company, because things happen in the economy that simply none of us can control, I thought, wouldn't it be great one day to at least be able to be in charge of that destiny? And that way, if you do well, fantastic. And if you don't do well, at least you can look yourself in the mirror and say you've tried and potentially learn from your mistakes. So there was a bit of me wanting to do something. The second reason would be, I grew up in a family. My father was a school teacher and a sports coach, where he went on to be a rugby coach. But I didn't realise how lucky I was, because he was a school teacher, a very well-to-do Edinburgh posh all-boys school. And we lived in a small house in the grounds. And I grew up and didn't realise, but I wanted for nothing. You know, I could go out and play tennis whenever I wanted, swim laps to the swimming pool, play golf on the mini course, go and kick about in football goals. We had all this stuff on our doorstep because we had access to facilities. We had access to sport. And as I got older, that's what we would talk about as a family, not business. We would say, wouldn't it be great if the people of Scotland had access to more of these facilities? And then what you do with those facilities is up to you. But having access to them enabled me, certainly personally, to become decent at a few sports. And what I then found was, when I then left school and came into the workplace and people want to play a game of badminton with you, you can play that. And you want to play a round of golf, yeah, you can play that. And then you make friends. And then those friends become your network. And then one day you're at work and you go, I need an architect, I need an accountant, I need a lawyer. And you go, oh, I played rugby with this guy. Or oh, I once played tennis against this guy. Oh, I met this guy at a football camp, or I coached with this guy. So I thought to myself, if I could maybe do something that could become an asset where people could start their own adventures in Scotland, then actually what you're doing is, by default, you're doing something good, but you're also actually helping the economy, and you're helping the health and well-being of the people around you, the communities around you that you care about. And the third aspect is my love of surfing. And I had a bit of luck, to be honest. Like I said, my father was a school teacher. When I was 7 years old, he went on a teaching exchange to Australia. We went to Surfers Paradise, of all places. So you can imagine what sport is the big one there. And I just got a wee bug for it at seven. Of course, I came back and didn't think surfing was a thing in Scotland until I was in my early 20s. And then I realised it was, if you've got a good enough wetsuit. And surfing then became my, I say, happy place, let's say. You know, my friends didn't do it or anything like that, but it was always my second sport. It was never the thing I talked about, but it was always the thing I went and did on my own. If you wanted adrenaline, I'd go on a bigger day. If I wanted to relax, I'd go down a smaller day. But just spending that time out in nature was just fantastic. So when I received a phone call in 2013 from a guy claiming at the time to have met some people in the Basque Country in Spain that were creating endless waves, I basically said, well, this sounds like, you know, a load of nonsense. Can I see it for myself? And the adventure began from there. So it was those three factors combined, I would say.
So in terms of the business, incorporating environmental, social and governance principles, it's been pivotal in shaping the development of Lost Shore Surf Resort. Do you think that this played a crucial role in engaging with investors?
Look, I had no idea what ESG was until sort of the shareholders, banks and pension funds who are now backing us told us we were just really good at it, you know, and that was what was interesting. I think a lot of people are calling out authenticity these days, and I absolutely love it, you know, especially having come from the corporate workplace. I think there's a lot of potential for people when they're starting their businesses to, if they're really authentic about what they do, you know, often that will manifest some luck in your direction. And I think, for instance, the first £40,000 I raised, and we've now raised over 100 million in structured finance, but the first 40, I used five of it to sponsor what is now the world's first PhD in surf therapy at Napier University. Now, if you give someone £40,000 to build a £55 million surf park, because that's the construction cost of the surf park, you don't spend five of it sponsoring someone on a university course in the normal course of business. But because I always knew it was a long shot at the time, I thought, well, if we're going to do this, this isn't a get-rich-quick scheme. We have to do it correctly, you know, and I'm very, very lucky that a few of those early bets have come up. So He now travels the world, Dr. Jamie Marshall, and he's right at the top of his field in terms of surf therapy and analysing why surfing is good for you. Years ago, we collaborated with Napier University because education's just obviously, I don't think I've met anyone who doesn't think education's important. So we thought if we could tie in with a local university and use this not just as a elite sporting venue or a pathway sporting venue or a fun place to go, if the students, say, at Napier University could use this to study renewable energy, social capital, habitat capital, the surf industry, and we become a little hub almost like, you know, yeah, to be honest, the mountain bike guys have done it really well down at Glentresh. You're creating your own economy there. Wouldn't that be great? So that's up and running. And we were doing things like, you know, really concentrating on the biodiversity of our site when perhaps other developers would have just been looking at the bottom line. And I think because we've done all that quite authentically, it's not necessarily sped us up, but actually it's resulted in us doing world first deals with pension funds and becoming a flagship project for a national bank. You know, the figures in business have to stack. I've never seen a business plan that doesn't look like the figures work. So everyone's business plan looks like it works. So I'm not going to sit here and say our numbers just looked miles better than anyone else's numbers. But I think our numbers could be backed up not only credibly financially, but I think people were very impressed at the real work that our team was doing in those areas. So yes, I think ESG absolutely helped with closing some of our investment deals.
I think your business probably epitomizes innovation in the business landscape, but just thinking about your journey, what challenges and successes have marked the development of the business?
I think the early years were just the hard. This is just a joy to me now at this point in time. I know it's super busy and everyone is quick to tell you how this year's going to be harder than the next, but honestly, nothing can be harder than the first 5 or 6 years starting up a business when you're on your own. You know, hopefully some of those listening to the podcast will take a bit of heart from hearing that. It's tough, whatever you do. But in those years, we did a land deal off market that I was very pleased about. We got through 2 major planning applications against the odds, which was very pleased about. The Wave Garden, the relationship we curated with the supplier in the Basque Country is something that's delivered us so much success and continues to this day. That was so I'm very pleased about that. And then, of course, just raising all that money, eventually doing that, was a big success. But I think that the biggest holistic success that I can say is that I've done it my way, you know, like when I say my way, it's maybe a bit selfish of me to say that. I've got a team around of like-minded people, so we've done it our way, you know, and what that basically means is, instead of trying to win every little battle and get screw everyone on every little deal that we come across, we've always looked at this as a much bigger puzzle, and we've tried to bring people together. And what we've found is, whilst it sometimes backfires because you expose yourself to losing daily battles, you almost always win wars that way. And we've ended up with a very, very strong team and what's going to be hopefully be a very strong and everlasting business.
And just you talking about that and some of the challenges, just generally, do you feel in Scotland there's a tendency to downplay and lack confidence in creative ideas? I think, you know, quite a lot of folk tend to think, oh, what if it goes wrong? Have you come across this? How would you say you've navigated it and overcome it?
Funnily enough, I think even though we're not open, so in some senses, you can look at us as a very young business, because I've been at this for almost 10 years. It's only been in the last couple of years where I've kind of looked back at myself and I go, Jesus, you were taking big risks there. But I promise you, they didn't feel like it for me, because they didn't. And I think that that's because at every step, I was trying to be objective. I was trying to be the most cynical person in the project. My job, bear in mind, was insolvency. So I was helping businesses gone under after a recession out of trouble. So I saw about every way, shape, or form as how to make a bad business. And I knew that I was paying attention. And ultimately, I was paying attention to, do people, is the staycation market here to stay? Yes. Is it undersaturated at scale in the UK? Yes, it is. You know, I go to Creef Hydro every year. It's fantastic. There's centre parks, there's all the rest of it. But they all run at super high occupancy rates. Is surfing here to stay now? Wetsuits are so good. Well, I know that. Others might not know that. People are starting to realise that now. But you can keep you warm all year round, no problem at all, especially when you add in changing rooms. So given that if you walk down George Street, every third shop's got a surfer in advertising something, that's got to tell you something. That's surfing. People want to be part of surfing. And I'm telling you, there's a reason for that, because it's fantastic fun and it's good for you in so many ways. So I thought, well, is surfing going to disappear? Because that's what my business plan is. I'm not creating surfing. Well, no, it's not. Just like I don't think football is going to disappear. It's only getting bigger, right? So if surfing's going nowhere, is inland surfing a real thing? Well, yeah, because I couldn't have scrutinized the market anymore. And these waves are real and I surfed them. And so what could go wrong? Well, I know what. I might fall for the Kool-Aid because I am a surfer. Let's send engineer after engineer, investor after investor, pension fund after pension fund into the heart of WaveGarden, the supplier, and test whether these things are mechanically sound. And then let's wait for them to open in the rest of the world and see if they break. No, they don't. Okay, great. Well, let's make a wee bet then. You know, let's back ourselves. So when you're seeing metrics like that, I never thought if I can just make this happen, they're so bloody hard to do. I thought if I can make this happen, it's actually quite a safe place to be at this size, because if we were much smaller than we were, it might be, you know, one in Livingston happens and it's better than yours. We're doing something on such a national scale with the backing of Event Scotland, Visit Scotland, multiple great investors. I know from having set up another business as well on this journey that we have all the tools at our disposal to make this work. And if we don't, it's on us, because I can only see this either being, I can see this only being a roaring success, but it's not going to be easy. In year one, we're going to make loads of errors and so on. So I saw that back then. I still see that now. And the only thing I look back differently now is our early investors were willing to probably lose that cash. I wouldn't have had that, you know, at the time.
That sounds very positive. And you sound quite fearless, which is quite motivating, I think. And it will be for our listeners. I guess there will be listeners just now who are eager to harness innovation within their own business. I wonder what advice you would offer to spark creativity or the great resources that you turn to when you're looking for inspiration and motivation.
Well, the when you say fearless, I think I've just learned and maybe been beaten into this over the years, is the only person that's ever going to save you is yourself. I mean, honestly, it's amazing. Even at the people I spoke to, the founders of Ulex were over with us on site recently. Massive brand, great for the environment, rethinking how we make wetsuits, dealing with Patagonia, Yves Chouinard, face-to-face, these guys, proper, you're like, wow. He's just been spending the last 2 years going around the world selling his product himself. Why? Because he wants it done right. You know, he could sell it, but if he really wants his vision to be right, he's got to do it himself. And I've tried to instill that on all my staff. So I would say to people that are starting their own businesses there, you're going to get thousands of bits of advice from people over the years. And I would say, listen to every single one of them, but never follow them uncompromisingly like a lemming over the cliff. Because what you'll find is if you speak to five architects about something, you will actually get five different views. So if you just speak to the one architect and you go, that's fine, you really have to, if you get a bad feeling about it, go and speak to another. And they'll probably both put you in your place, but you've got to ultimately make your mind up about everything. So be fearless in your decision-making, but be open to help every day. And I mean that, because even this morning, I was asking for help on something. And the guy was like, why are you asking my help for? So I said, don't have a clue what I'm doing in that situation. So ask for help, but make your own mind up.
Right. Well, I mean, you sound like a true innovator. So the term innovator can sometimes pose a challenge, as some business owners hesitate to identify with that word. So in your opinion, why is there this reluctance to embrace an innovator and innovation generally?
Well, innovation can it can maybe be confused with being an inventor, you know, almost like and you know, like you have to be to be an innovator means you have to be super smart and have come up with this amazing idea that only you can do. And I'm like, some people can do that. I certainly am in that category. You know, I'd be smart enough to do that. But everyone can innovate in their own sector. So what's innovative to me is things like we're doing turnover rents in the hub building. That's innovative from a property perspective. We're using the world's most efficient technology. That's innovative from a green perspective. We're setting up school curriculum. We're trying to get ourselves on the school curriculum through the STEM network, the government initiatives, and that's innovative. So I think there actually people might be scared of the word innovation because they think it means a product, whereas actually you can innovate every single day by the way in which you act.
In terms of funding, I just want to go back to the funding. I know that listeners will be interested to find out how did you secure the funding? Where did you start? How did it all come together? Did it all come together at once? Or was there a small amount of funding first and it was a domino effect? Or how did that all work?
Yeah, I mean, I was 18 months, I didn't have any funding, but I was actually working as an investment surveyor at the time. So on the one hand, I was trying to convince funds in, say, London to buy very low-risk assets. And I knew that if they found out I was trying to build a surf park, my reputation was going to go to tatters straight off the bat. So it was very much no funding for 18 months. And then my uncle found out that I had this idea, and he took me for a lunch one day and he said, "Look, Andy, you've been paying people to do pictures with smoked salmon and cider and things like that, and feasibility studies and using your old mates and to do," he said, "you must owe people some money." I said, "Well, I do, but I don't, because actually everyone that has given me help, I think they know that it's probably never going to happen, but I've made a deal with them all where if it does happen, they'll pay me X for this report or Y for that report. But I've been truthful to them." And he said, "Well, can I help you out?" And I said, "Well, yeah." And he gave me a loan. He actually gave me a loan of £40,000. Very lucky. But what I did was I started sending checks in the post to these people. Now, let's say it was a 20 grand feasibility study. It was just a 5 grand check. But the guy expected no more than a can of cider. So when he saw the fact, "What's this all about?" And now he wanted to help more, right? And so the momentum spiraled. And then, honestly, then I started to really gear into the property metrics of things. If we could buy land, increase the land value, leverage that land value to raise more money, and eventually it becomes an equity play. So it's a mix of property and equity. But no, we've had about 6 rounds of investment, and it's resulted in, we're now back. World's first pension fund deal in the sector. So a pension fund's backed us, 150-year term, low-risk money.
That's a great story. And it's quite interesting just to hear how you hooked folk in. Sometimes, I guess, you've just got to wing it and hope that, you know, it comes together.
Well, touching on your do we lack confidence in Scotland and the lack of... Look, everyone is winging it. If there's one thing I've learned in the last few years, now I've spoken to billionaires, and I've spent days with these people, and you know, investment bankers, all these guys that people think are miles away from me up here, they're all really good at their job, and they're all very helpful. It's just very hard to get into that world, and B, hold your own when you're there. And what you start to realize is that, well, I can bring something to the party too. We can work together as a team. The bankers actually need people like us to come and deliver the type of projects to get them the money to get their to hit their financial metrics. So it's been a very educational journey for me, but one thing I've learned is we shouldn't look to places like London and New York and always think something's better is going on elsewhere, when actually you look back at Scotland, we were an enlightened people, we were determined people, you know, going way back, we had a sort of warrior spirit. So we should embrace that. And I personally think we should stop. A lot of people here should stop thinking, you know, I can't do this. I promise you this. I am not a super smart person and I've not invented anything.
And you've got a bit of a trailblazing spirit, I think, as well. You've got a way about you that I think you probably are quite a good salesperson. You've got that kind of, you know, feeling that you could probably sell. And I think that's probably part of it as well, would you say?
Well, I'm going to go and have to sell surfing to the Scottish public. So I would hope so. I think there's, I can't sell anything that I don't feel strongly about, and that's the interesting thing. If I'm not, and maybe this is a personality trait, but my daughter has it a little bit. I've got some friends that have it. You know, if I'm interested in something, I'm all in, and if I'm not, I'm actually useless. You know, my wife would tell you that, absolutely useless. But I truly believe that the people that visit our site, it's going to affect their lives in a positive way. You know, it's going to give them inspiration. It's going to pull them outdoors. They're going to realize they can do a sport, and they're going to make their own adventures from that. You know, they're going to spend good experiences with their family, which ultimately, when we're lying there decrepit, is what you look back and think about, isn't it? It's all the good times you spent with your friends and your family. And I believe we're on this site, we're going to do that. So yes, I am going to be selling this this project, and I'm going to be selling it. And maybe in 5 years' time, you ask me again, I go back and I say, oh, actually, I was wrong about this. But right now, I truly believe in what we're doing. And that's probably what makes you a good salesperson. It's what make a lot of entrepreneurs good salespeople.
Well, certainly where I'm based in the Highlands, the north of Scotland does have a big surfing community up here. So, and it's been going for many, many years.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting now to hear how you're developing it. So, I mean, finally, what's the most valuable piece of business advice you've been given?
There's a phrase that I came across, and it's, if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, you'll think it's useless. And what that is basically saying is I think there is potential in every single person that I meet. And a bit like if we had time after this podcast, I'd probably be asking you about the radio. How did you get into that? And what were the... You know, like if you're curious and you're constantly looking for potential in people, then I think you're going to form really strong networks, and those networks are going to result in good business. Because I know myself, I wasn't, you know, born with the ability to sell, and I didn't have necessarily a lot. I was a standard student, you know, I wasn't an outstanding student. But when I found my thing that I was passionate about eventually, I became really, really good at it. And like you say, I'm now probably an expert in this inland surfing world, but I guarantee you I'm not an expert in anything else.
Well, that was really inspirational. I hope that the listeners enjoyed your chat about your business, and we wish you all the best from Business Gateway, and I was going to say we wish you all the luck, but I don't think you need luck. I think you've made your own luck, and just from your motivational chat, I think it will be a positive sign, certainly in terms of the funding and your thought process and what you've done. So thanks very much, Andy, for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks. And finally, I just say we're going to be recruiting as well, and we would love to hear from local people. We're going to be recruiting for all sorts of jobs very soon. And yeah, we look forward to building this economy with a lot of good local people. So please get in touch and follow us on socials and so on.
Thanks very much. That's Andy Haddon, who is the Managing Director and Founder of Lost Shores Surf Resort. Andy, thank you for all your insight today. And from all of us at Business Gateway, can I wish you all the best for your opening later this year for your new venture. Andy Haddon is the founder of Lost Shores Surf Resort. And this has been our Business Gateway podcast. You can listen to our other podcasts at bgateway.com, where you'll also find more information and all of our support services. I'll be back next time with more Business Gateway podcasts. Until then, bye for now.